Nasty.
They were called nasties, and they were nasty.
Some of the things that we've seen are so horrific.
These films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.
An extravaganza of gory violence, capable of depraving and corrupting those who watched it.
I have never seen a video, mister. I wouldn't. I actually don't need to see what I know is in that film.
And welcome to another episode of Doing the Nasty Podcast. This is season 2, episode number 35. I'm one of your hosts, Duncan McLeish. Joining me is the still marginally hungover Mark Ball. How's it going, Mark?
A week later and I'm still hungover. I don't know how this happened. Yeah, fuck. I can't party like I used to. I'm getting fucking old.
Oh man, our intro is going to be short for this one because we caught up fully a week ago, but in recording terms, like literally on the previous like hour. So we're going to probably do a more short and sweet one. But what I thought we would do at the start of this one is give an update to where we are actually on the Video Nasties list now and the future of the show, Mark. By the end of this episode number 35, we will have approximately 6 episodes left to go. And that is done. Believe it or not, we are that close to the end. My plan is to try and see if myself and yourself can get things all pretty much squared away for summer. The reason behind that is summer CDs happens and then everything goes to fucking shit. However, if that doesn't look like it's going to happen, then we will put a pause in whatever episodes we are doing at a natural break and then come back after summer series to close out with maybe the last 2 episodes or something around that time. So it's just to let you guys know that is the plan. Furthermore, just to whet the whistle and get you all excited, there are still some heavy hitters still to go from ourselves. One of the big ones being The Thing, which we've still to get to, which in itself is fucking huge. However, with every movie like The Thing, you know there's a movie like Mondo Cannibale. Yeah. We'll also be covering some more Norman J. Warren when we do Terror, which is not great.
I've had a Blu-ray of that for fucking years now and never watched it.
Well, you're gonna be watching it. A movie which is AKA is Schoolgirls in Chains, which I'm fairly sure I'm not allowed to watch that movie for internet reasons. But I can announce this because I want to announce this. I want to put this out here and let everyone know that this made me very, very, very happy when I saw this pop up as the very final movie that we will do on this show. Have I told you about this yet? I can't remember if I have actually told you that this is our last movie or not.
I mean, I have the list on my phone somewhere, yep. But I'm blanking on what the last one is.
The last movie for the peeps out there is a little movie, you may have heard of it before, called Zombie Holocaust, aka Dr. Butcher MD.
Oh no.
I hadn't realized that was the last movie and I got super fucking excited when I read that. That movie is straight up bananas. So that's what we're doing is the very final movie. That'll be the very last movie you hear from Doing the Nasty, which I think that is a testament to all the hard work and all the quality viewing that we've done. It's by finishing with
go out with some fireworks.
Dr. Butcher MD should have been the name of that movie. Absolute fucking trash. However, speaking about movies that aren't trash, we are going to be doing a double bill of surprising quality on this episode. Now, and that's not to say that both movies are great. Truth be told, there is one that is much better than the other. But we are going to be reviewing Alice, Sweet Alice on this episode, aka Communion, directed by Alfred Soul, who sadly passed away, I believe, last year. And Beast with a Gun, aka Street Killers, directed by Sergio Greco. Now, he had a very long and prestigious career. Now, I say prestigious as in he did a lot of movies, not that any of them got Oscars. This was actually his final movie from 1977, so I think he died after making this. Put everything he had into this one little movie.
Depressing.
It's a Politsiteshi movie. So, for those that don't know, it's the genre that basically spun out after the Giallo. Giallo directors went on and pretty much did Politsiteshi movies. They were kind of almost cynical crime dramas where, like, the cops were just as bad as the criminals. And, you know, when you stare into the abyss stares back at you. Or when you go for vengeance, remember, and pack two shovels. All these sorts of movies, but done Italian style. So it's all full of shagging. Sometimes consensual. maybe not so much in this movie. So that is the two that we have for you. I want to do Alice Sweet Alice first because I kind of love this movie. So we're going to take a short break, Mark. People out there are going to hear things from the Video Nasty, I'm going to get it right this time, documentary. See how I did that there? The old Draconian Days doc. And you're going to then hear the trailer for Alice, Sweet Alice, when myself and Mark return. We're discussing that movie and we're doing it right after this.
Communion, or the cult horror movie of all time. Well, not quite, but Alfred Soul's movie is pretty good. It featured the debut of Brooke Shields. The reason why it kept getting re-released and retitled as Alice, Sweet Alice, Holy Terror. And it's mainly all about Alfred Soul's childhood when he was growing up in Paterson, New Jersey. It's all geared around characters he knew, put into a psycho-thriller context. He always said that he saw the church as this gothic castle and the mass as a blood sacrifice. He wanted to do something about that. I met him at the time of release of the movie, which was put out by Hemdale, and he told me then that in 1961, which is the timescale of this film, that's when the church in his area was at its most powerful and so strong, and the fact that mass was still said in Latin, he felt it had a real sort of like creepy potency about it. I think the reason the police kept seizing on this movie is because it felt gorier than actually what it was. And that had a lot to do with him using parts of the body in ways that you wouldn't normally associate with a horror movie. I mean, most horror films sort of like stab you in the back, the chest. Here, you get a brick in the mouth, you get a knife in the foot. I mean, these are sort of vulnerable parts of the body that Alfred thought that we could all sort of empathise with. He never made anything as good as this, unfortunately. I mean, Pandemonium was awful. Tanya's Island was pretty terrible. But he's still active in the industry as a production designer on TV shows like Veronica Mars. You'll notice a Psycho poster in one of the scenes. That's Alfred Soul's deliberate attempt to steer you in the right direction, because this is an homage to Hitchcock and to Roman Polanski at the same time. Linda Miller, by the way, was Jason Miller's wife from The Exorcist, and Lillian Roth, who plays a pathologist, was the subject of her own movie back in the 50s, I'll Cry Tomorrow, starring Susan Hayward.
Alice was too old to play with dolls and too young to make love. Brooke Shields, as you've never seen her before. She was too beautiful to play with boys and too young to play with men. So Alice began to play with death.
She's made a repeated request that the kids see a psychiatrist.
She has a knack of making things look like accidents.
No more dolls, no more toys. Alice only plays with bodies. It's too late to save her. Of unnatural love and unnatural death.
And welcome back, ladies and gents. So, Alice, Sweet Alice, directed by Alfred Soul. He's a soul man. I don't think that's fair. But it is co-written by him and Rosemary Ritvo, potentially, I don't know. Stars Linda Miller, Mildred Clinton, Paula E. Shepherd, Niles McAllister, Jane Lowry, Rudolph Wilrich, Michael Hardstark, Alfonso de Noble, Gary Allen, wait 1 second, Brooke Shields, that's right, Brooke Shields' debut, has Patrick Gorman and some other folks in here as well. The synopsis for this one, as listed on the IMDb's, is in 1961, a divorced Catholic couple's life is turned upside down when one of their two adolescent daughters is suspected of killing her younger sister's brutal murderer during the First Holy Communion and a series of subsequent stabbings. This is a terribly written synopsis, but that's IMDb. Sometimes you just have to roll with it. Had you seen this one before?
Yeah, we covered this on Summer Series last year. I've had a Blu-ray of this at, I think it's Severn. It might be Vinegar Center. One of the two. They put out like a while ago. I know I bought that in the sale like a ways back. Yeah, this movie fucking rules. this is a fun rewatch too. I watched this a couple nights ago and lots of stuff I'd kind of forgotten. There's a lot of religious iconography in this movie that I had kind of spaced out. There's a lot to unpack in this fucking movie.
Yeah, this is one of these ones where I kind of think they got the balance right. So this is 1976. Once again, as old historians would tell you, the slasher genre in America didn't really kick off until after Halloween, Mark. But with like fresh eyes, we can see that it did exist before that through movies like, you know, Bob Clark's Black Christmas or, you know, Alice Sweet Alice being one of them. However, they are definitely more in line with their counterparts in the kind of giallo cinema that was being made in the very early 70s, and less the full-on slasher genre that we would know and love from the kind of very, very late 70s, very early 80s and onwards. This is still kind of, it's the mass killer. There's a lot going on, but it still has that feel of, specifically in this one, that kind of almost European style of kind of cinematography, where things are almost kind of, my watch is speaking to me, kind of, it's almost Vaseline on the lens, if you know what I mean. There's a kind of mistiness about it, which I find quite interesting. I think what is super cool about this movie is that it sets up an interesting dichotomy of, you think you know who the killer is, and then the movie is trying to throw every red herring in the book at you, whilst at the same time, like, kind of leaning back into a very kind of heady religious plot that doesn't really necessarily lend its way at the end to much of an explanation as to everything you've seen. So it hints at a lot of stuff, it plays with some lofty concepts, but if you strip those out, this movie would still work really, really well as a who did it slasher movie. And I think that's the interesting aspect about it, is that at no point does any of those headier aspects detract from it. Yes, they can be a bit highbrow at times, but I think on its base level, it still works really, really, really well. I love the design of the killer in this. I love some of the shots in this are absolutely fucking incredible. And some of the deaths work really, really, really well. It also has an uncomfortable level of, like, see the neighbor in particular, the creepy, yes, like, in the pants, like, fucking, like, semen-stained, crusted underwear neighbor dude. Like, stuff like that is in this movie for no explicable reason, out with, this guy could be a killer, maybe. So, you know what I mean? It's like really obvious red herrings, which should, in theory, make it like a pretty bad movie, and it doesn't for me. Like, I cruise through this one enjoying it. I think, that, like I mentioned before, the cinematography is great. I love the pacing of this one. It is, you know, it is slightly longer than it probably should be. It's about 1 hour and 50, but I think that works really well. I love the score for it. I think all that works really, really well. And yeah, it's just what it's one of those ones that I've seen it like God knows how many times now. And it's one of those ones that the more I watch it, the longer things have went on, the more I kind of feel that, like, because you see these things that pop up online, they're like great movies that you should have seen. And occasionally on those lists, there is a movie like Alice, Sweet Alice, where I'm like, that, yeah, I'm glad you've raised that. But then on the same list, it'll be like, movies you should have seen, The Exorcist. And you're like, everyone's fucking seen The Exorcist. Like, this to me is more in line with that. It's had a big push in the last couple of years, some good Blu-ray releases. I think Arrow put it out not that long ago, which is cool. I own that version. I actually own two versions of this movie. I love that element about it. I would say, on the flip side, I think the reason that is maybe underseen is because it isn't, you can't really sell this one as a slasher, and because it's not really being sold as a slasher, it falls into a weird bit where I think people think it's too heady, and it's not. It's just, it's dealing with topics that are really interesting without it necessarily losing point of what is there actually to do, which is deliver gnarly stabby deaths and all the rest. So yeah. I have a lot of time for this movie. On the list here of tier 3 ones, I think Alice Sweet Alice ranks amongst the top, if I'm being honest. So yeah, that's my entire take on this movie in a nutshell.
I agree. You could totally, that's kind of what I realized on this rewatch of this one, is there's a lot going on in this movie, but if you really want to, you could just like sit back and watch it. It's just like a kind of proto slasher, and not really think too hard about it. And I think still have a really good time with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got some gnarly fucking kills. I was just thinking back to the one where homeboy gets tied up and rolled off like a fucking like when you're a kid and you play steamroller, basically, only he's on like a fourth story building.
Yeah.
And when he lands, he doesn't, like, they shoot it pretty brilliantly where they throw out a dummy, and then like in almost the same shot, there might be like a quick cut there, like the actual actor like does this thing where he lands on a pile of like fucking bottles.
Yeah.
With his head.
Yeah.
It's so fucking, it's just like, there's so many things in this movie where like they just add like a little bit of extra just like to make it a little more rough and make you a little bit more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And like I think The Neighbor exists solely for that reason, is just to like turn the skis level on this movie up to like 12.
Yeah, if that guy lived in your block, right, your kind of, well, your dwelling block, we call them a block of flats in the UK. If that guy, right, lived in your block of flats, like there'd be pitchforks chasing him out as a child molester. Like he's just such an obvious kiddie fiddler. It's really weird, and the way it's shot inside his apartment as well is just designed to make your skin crawl.
The camera is awesome. So close to everything. It feels like a cramped apartment because they shoot everything like 6 inches away from fucking shit.
Mm-hmm. It's really well done. It just adds a level. Like I say, like the movie, you could take that whole element out, the movie would work fine. But the fact it's in there is just creepy.
And I would agree, the ending of this is, if it almost feels like it's trying to do a little bit too much, like I think that's where some of the like where this feels a little bit on the long side is the very end of this movie, basically, because it's trying to tie up like so many loose ends. And like I give it props because it does have a shit ton of payoff at the end of this, but like it almost has like one or two too many endings. Like it could have ended like, you know, scenes prior to that, basically. But that's about my only real complaint about this movie, is like, yeah, it tries to do a little bit too much at the very, very end of it. But This is a great fucking movie. Evil kid movies make me really uncomfortable. And, you know, spoiler alert for a movie that's like 45 years old or whatever, like it isn't really that, like it turns out, like it's not the fucking kid, so like who is it? And as long as you're willing to, you know, as long as you buy the twist ending to this, basically, I think you're gonna have a really good time with this movie. And again, I can also see why this really made the censors uncomfortable. There's, oh, yeah, you know, kids dying. There's the threat of kids inflicting violence on adults. There's lots of just like real kind of scathing jabs at religion.
That's probably the thing more than anything, I think, especially in the UK, because the censorship is being done predominantly from kind of religious conservative right. So anything like that at all is gonna instantly gain a raised eyebrow, and then you shove on the fact that child peril in any way, shape or form. Because this movie, you've got to remember as well, this movie has a surprisingly low body count. Only 4 people are actually murdered, which is low. But you wouldn't know, like, that's like, generally you would throw that as a criticism, but because it does everything else so well, it's never, you're never like super focused on that. It's just, you're,
there's
like
so much uncomfortable shit between, yeah, the kills that it never really lets up.
Yeah, and that in itself is a huge testament to it. I'll be honest, like, I was thinking about this more and more when it came to thinking about how we would approach a movie like this from a grading point of view, because it does get difficult to quantify. Like, I myself think this is not necessarily all that bad compared to a ton of other movies that we've discussed, but there is that kind of weird, uncomfortable, like, sheen, that's like almost this kind of film over the top of the movie all the way through it, that I think genuinely adds to its reputation and its kind of overall merit to being examined by a list like this. I would never, right, say it's like on the harsh end, but even though it only has 4 kills, none of those kills are like absolutely fucking gnarly. I did kind of feel myself going, actually, I couldn't in good conscience case dismiss this one. And I kind of actually almost feel like I'm leaning somewhere between slap on the wrists and a community service. I'm ultimately going to stick with a slap on the wrists, but like, if you told me, oh, community service, I wouldn't be like that, really, Mark? I could see where you would go with that, just because of everything that happens in it. I think it is one that, yeah, I mean, I would like to think our listeners are smart enough to have checked out Alice, Sweet Alice. But if you haven't, for whatever reason, it is one that's worth checking out. I advocate for it a lot, because I think it's one of those movies that is worth either reevaluating because you haven't seen it a while, or sitting down and watching it for the first time, because chances are, if you're a fan of just good, well put together kind of 70s, 80s horror movies, Alice, Sweet Alice ranks really, really strong for me. We talked about it, like Mark was saying, in summer series, and that really is for the best of the best, and there's a reason behind that. I think it is one of the best representations of horror from 76. So yeah, I'm gonna come in with slapping the wrists. What about yourself, Mark?
So I gotta do the thing on this one where basically, like, me personally, in 2023, my sensibilities, this is a movie that kind of changes upon a couple of rewatches. The first time you watch this, this is a fucking feel bad movie. Like, I would love this, like, right along with something like Calvaire.
Yeah.
And this is gonna make you deeply uncomfortable, and it kind of spends its runtime just kind of fucking with you and like throwing things at you that are gonna make you real uncomfortable. Upon rewatch, that effect is slightly lessened, and you kind of start to see some of the more like black humor in this, and you're kind of a little bit more along for the ride once you kind of know what to expect, basically. If I was a censor in fucking 1980 whatever and sat down and watched this, especially a deeply religious censor, I'm thinking, like, one of the real big things of this movie are the shots of them waiting to get the communion wafer with their tongues sticking way out, and it is deeply fucking sexual, like how it's shot and just like the looks on their faces and stuff. And that, I'm not a religious person at all, and it made me fucking deeply uncomfortable even on the rewatch. So I'm just thinking, like, a censor in the 80s head would fucking explode watching this movie, probably. So I'm gonna give it a strong slap on the wrist. If I was a censor in the 80s, this would be a fucking community, or this would probably be a hard time movie.
There we go. So that's Alice, Sweet Alice. We're now going to turn to a movie chances are you've never heard of, chances are you've never seen. It was a first time watch for me, for sure. Its official Nasties title is Street Killers, but its AKA here is Beast with a Gun. We're going to be back to discuss it after the setup from the doc, the trailer, and then myself and Mark are going to get into it right after this.
So this film is Street Killers, also called Beast with a Gun. And this film is a wonderful example of a 70s Italian gangster film. And it has Helmut Berger, or Berger, depending on how you say it, who is Visconti's favourite psychopath, as this extraordinarily beautiful Aryan demigod with the piercing blue eyes and the blonde hair. And of course, as we know, the prettier you are, the crazier you are. Richard Harrison plays the buff, thick as two planks, police inspector who really tries very hard to be the enigmatic Italian cop but fails abominably, and it ends up being a kind of who's sexier, who's spunkier, who's buffer hot off between him and Helmut Berger by the end of it. The film has Marissa Mell as the main female character, and she was in Danger, Diabolique, and One on Top of the Other. And so she carries off the role beautifully. The relationship that she develops with the mad killer is actually a very interesting one, because obviously she begins as the victim, but there's a very strange, enigmatic kind of amour fou that starts to begin to develop between them that is then interceded by Richard Harris. And then it ends up at the end with some pseudo incest with another couple. So there's a lot of very dynamic triangles going on. It's a film of many triangles, and of course this keeps it interesting. Possibly one of the early scenes could have been the reason why the film was threatened to be put on the list, and this is where Helmut Berger gets his hoods to kill a man by pouring lime all over him and then burying him, and then he rapes the man's wife. But it's a very strange scene because he's clearly... It's the least rapey rape scene. He's got his trousers completely up, and he keeps kind of randomly fumbling with a general area that may be or may not be penile. He's humping her leg kind of like a dog would do. But more importantly, he is most obsessed with making sure that his gang are seeing him and seeing what he's doing. So the whole scene is very much about attention being focused on to be seen to be raping this woman. And there is a sense, as there is in all gang rape scenes in most films, this homoerotics, that actually this is a film and this is a scene where it's men wanting to show their virility to other men, and where they're not actually raping women because they hate women, although clearly they do, but they're raping women because they are trying to have some kind of homoerotic bond with the other men that they're in the situation with. And so when watching this film initially, this is what I was thinking about. Far, far later in the film, there are some very interesting and nuanced indications that he is actually a homosexual, and that his psychotic tendencies may be coming from some kind of repressed homosexual feelings towards a very handsome young rent boy that has become his partner in crime. It's an enigmatic little film, and I think that certainly both in its aesthetics and in all of the little nuanced, niggling psychological peccadillos that it shows in all of its characters, it does have an enigmatic element for people who enjoy that kind of Italianiness in films that you can't really put your finger on. One strange little emergence that this film had was in Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown, where the film is playing on the television in Bridget Fonda's house.
Yes, I'm going to kill your friend, and I'll do it very, very slow. I'm going to inflict much pain. You're going to hear a guy beg for his life, lady, because he betrayed Nanny Vitale. That's the car I want. Don't worry. There will be no bloodshed. Don't worry. There will be no bloodshed.
Go on.
You afraid of me? Are you?
Let me alone.
You're not afraid of me?
No, let me go. Let me go.
Hold it. Take the girls along. We'll need them as hostages.
Inspector Santini. So nice to see you. Inspector Santini.
What'd you shoot him for, you crazy?
I'm sorry, I lost my temper.
You're lucky you don't get a bullet in the brain. Check outside.
I told you, no one ever comes here.
Hi. Shut up!
He needs a doctor! You can't leave him like this! Let me go!
Welcome back, ladies and gents. So let's talk about Street Killers, a.k.a. Beast with a Gun. This one from 1977, written and directed by Sergio Greco. The additional dialogue work is done by Enzo Milioni. And we have Helmut Berger, Marissa Mell, Richard Harrison, Marina Giordana, Luigi Bonos, Vittorio Ducci, Enzo Marono, Claudio Gora, Alberto Scolante, I think, and some other folks in here. The synopsis for this one, as listed on the IMDb's, is in Italy, escaped sadistic killer Nanni Vitale and his henchmen terrorize the populace and seek revenge against those responsible for Vitale's incarceration. I have found over time, Mark, that I have grown to love the Polizietteschi genre. I don't think it's as consistent as the giallo genre, but I found that as a subgenre, at times it can be wholly rewarding. Now, there's a lot of different facets to it. Like, in the same way that you have male-themed giallo movies, female giallo movies, you have supernatural, suspenseful giallo movies, and then you have just good old-fashioned, grounded, erotic, sexploitation giallo movies. You kind of get, like, a different flavour of Polizietteschi movies, depending on what you're watching. And I think that's kind of where I've found the interest, is it's not just one format done over and over again. Sometimes it is the, you know, it's the good cop trying to crack the bad case. Other times it's this police officer is worse than the criminals. You know, he's just like a really bad dude, and you don't want him tracking you down. And then there's the other ones that are kind of from the other side. So you follow a criminal who is trying to seek vengeance for something that's happened, and like all the various bits and bobs. And then you get the weird giallo Polizietteschi crossover, which those are like very, very, very strange to watch, for sure. So you get a lot of different ones, but this one falls into the very kind of straightforward, we're following the criminal, Polizietteschi movie. So, bad guy, is out there, he's doing bad things, and we have the police trying to stop him doing what he's doing. However, he and his gang are kind of ramping up the violence as it goes along. I personally think there's a lot to enjoy about this movie, specifically because this dude here, this director, has like a really has a really interesting past in making movies. I believe he may have directed the original Inglourious Basterds, which obviously our friend, the big QT, was heavily inspired by. But I found out through IMDb, of all places, that this movie actually got a bit of a rub from Quentin Tarantino as part of Jackie Brown. So there you go. Because the character played by Bridget Fonda is actually watching this movie on the TV.
Oh, really?
So there you go.
Wild.
So, like, that to me blew my mind. There's, according to IMDb, it says, this movie got a whole new life as part of Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown. The character of Melanie, played by Bridget Fonda, is watching television, and Samuel L. Jackson's Ordell Robbie, when the main star is on the screen walking forward after having attacked the girl, Robbie says, "Rutger Hauer?" question mark, and Melanie corrects him and says, "Helmut Berger." Scenes shown including Berger slapping slapping and his men getting gas. The soundtrack is also heard very loudly. So yeah, Tarantino, big fan. Surprise, surprise.
Right.
Like Tarantino just pulls that from his ass cheeks. Yeah, like, to me, I could see, like, I could totally see why Tarantino would like this movie. This feels like a Tarantino movie. This is exploitation, over-the-top violence, gang violence. It's beautifully shot. This is the thing, like, Italian cinema, even if it's trashy as fuck, it's shot beautifully and the score is awesome. I kind of loved a lot of this movie, and then there were other bits that kind of dragged it down for me. I think at times the main character Vitaly himself, as played by Helmut Berger, can be like almost unwatchable because of some of the actions of him. He's a deeply dislikable character. He's a bad dude. And as a result of that, I think at certain times I'm watching him do things, I'm kind of caught up with the action, and other times he's kind of repulsive, and I kind of don't want to spend any time with him. I think this one flies in. This one is like full on, like action packed, fast paced. A lot of the Pleat Sateshi movies have that kind of kinetic fast energy, and you know, it rolls very, 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 very well. I think you have like stunning females in this movie. What's really interesting though, I don't know if you clocked this as well, like there's a marked shift in who the kind of main female lead is in this movie, about 25 minutes from the end, where all of a sudden we're focused much on a younger actress than we are on the main woman.
Yeah, I was a little confused by that.
I'm totally confused by that. The movie doesn't do anything to explain that at all. And the more I watched it, like I'm sure there's a story somewhere. Maybe, I don't know if she wanted to film the rest of it, or there was contractual obligations, or what went on there. But the movie is no longer interested in spending any huge amount of time with her, and then, you know, subsequently goes for I'm going to be as shallow as a fucking teaspoonful of water here, much more attractive younger actress. I don't know where they were going with that overall. But as Pleat Sateshi movies goes, this is on the gnarlier side. But I could rattle off about four or five movies that I think, I know for a fact, are not on the nasties list, that are directed by people like Umberto Lenzi, for example, that are more graphic than this. I mean, yes, there's rape involved with this one, which is ultimately going to give it its push towards it, but I've seen rape done in other ones, and so I'm unsure as to, it might just be the way it was distributed in the UK, or maybe the fact it was distributed in the UK, but this to me kind of felt like a bit of a head scratcher, in that it doesn't do anything like more overt than a lot of other movies of the time. And then I was thinking about even more, there are movies from this, like when this would have been banned, that do a lot more out there. Like one that just sprung to mind just as we were talking there, a movie like William Friedkin's Cruising is right. A lot more depraved than Beast with a Gun. I use that depraved not because it deals with the underground gay sex scene. I mean, just the way the killer kills people is more depraved than anything in this fucking movie. And that wasn't banned. And so, I'd like, this one doesn't even have the horror element where I'm like, all right, I understand. Well, it's dealing with, you know, like, Satanists and, or something like that, where I'm like, I could see why the censors would be all over it. It actually, like, weirdly just came down to me just going that, oh, they clearly have something against Italian movies. You know what, well, I mean? I honestly started to feel myself get more and more angry about the fact that this was actually even on a tier 3 list, because like I say, there are plenty of other movies, both American, UK and European, that go a lot harder than this from this time frame that aren't on this list. So... I think this is
solely on the list for the rape scene. The rest of this is pretty fucking tame. Like you said, there's a zillion other movies that do like pretty much, you know, at least in terms of like the violence and, you know, stuff that's going on screen, with the exception of that rape scene. The rape scene in this is pretty fucking graphic and goes on for a really long time. And kind of like we brought up on the Scream for Vengeance episode, like doesn't shy away from any of it, and like the music is really fucking weird in that scene too, where it's like not really like normally you if you're gonna put music in a scene like that, sometimes you just don't, but like if you were going to, you would want it to be pushing the idea that this is an awful thing that's happening, and the music in this fucking scene does not do that for some reason.
It's the Italian thing. It's like a don't torture a duckling, like when for lack of a better word, the gypsy woman who gets murdered in the graveyard. Like the music that's playing over that is this really kind of, what Tarantino used for Reservoir Dogs, is that idea of stuck in the middle with you while someone's getting their ear chopped off. It's that music. It's almost like I can see why this movie had an impact on him, because the music is almost juxtaposed against what you're seeing. It doesn't fit, but if anything, that makes it more impactful because it doesn't fit.
Right. Yeah, I can kind of see that. Like maybe the juxtaposition just isn't quite as effective, because you know something like Stuck in the Middle of You hits a lot harder than, you know, some random Italo disco song from some fucking band long, long gone.
Yeah. Also, I don't think these guys back in the day had the wherewithal to do stuff like that. You know what I mean?
No.
Maybe she's a popular pop song or like something along those lines.
Right. To kind of answer... Well, sort of. I have some speculation about the actress thing. So I recognized our lead actress, well, for most of the movie in this. Yep. That's Marissa Mell. She was a big deal in especially Italian movies. She is the lead actress in a movie that, like, I kind of saw some parallels with this one, which is Danger Diabolic, which...
Yes.
I haven't brought up Mystery Science Theater in a long time, but for a long time, that was the series finale that ran at the end of the Sci-Fi Channel era of Mystery Science Theater, and it's actually like a pretty good movie. Like occasionally those dudes rift movies where I was
isn't Danger Diabolic's Mario Bava, is it not?
Yeah,
it's like how dare they ever riff a Mario Bava movie? Sons of
I mean, there's plenty of stuff to make fun of it, but yeah, it's one that has gotten kind of a reassessment. That episode came out in like 1993 or something, which sadly is also around the time Marissa Mell passed away. But Danger Diabolic came out in 1968, almost a full decade before this movie. So my speculation is kind of that, like, yeah, maybe she was like she was a fucking super accomplished actress by 77, but by those standards, and unfortunately by today's standards, may have been seen as a little over the hill at that point. Right. Or she might have been expensive enough that they just ran out of fucking time and money to keep her on set. So she's like, all right, my time's up, dudes. I'm leaving. I don't give a fuck if this movie's finished or not. So yeah, they may have had to recast her with somebody less expensive to get. Because yeah, she's a pretty big deal. She's got a pretty big following as far as you know, like especially like 70s Italian actresses.
Kind of. Like memory. Did she not die? She had like there was a weird thing about her death, if memory serves. I can't remember the ins and outs of the details, but she died under less than auspicious circumstances, if you know what I mean. I think it was pretty tragic. I think she ended up a bit tragic towards the end, if you know what I mean.
She died of throat cancer, it says, at the age of 53. So, yeah, she's pretty fucking young for...
Yes.
Tapered
off considerably. Like, the work that she was doing was not in the quality of work that she was doing before. But yeah, she would like as the genre goes, she'd like she pops up. I've seen at least 3 or 4 movies with her in it for sure. All Italian. She was a recognizable one for me, like for sure.
She's in a Fulci movie I've never seen, one on top of the other from 1969.
From when 1969?
Yeah, the Wikipedia says Fulci's Giallo, one on top of the other from 1969. Yeah,
Fulci made like 3 Giallos. And I think about 68 and 69 that are all essentially like kind of more in line with like a Murder She Wrote than they are anything else. They're not gnarly. They're all kind of like, the lover is the one that has killed my wife to get away with this fortune and the police will never stop me. That sort of thing. They're fine to check out, but like you can tell that Fulci is basically collecting that paycheck. He's like, gimme, 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 and kind of cutting his teeth, and then a couple of years later making movies like fucking Lizard in a Woman's Skin and shit like that out of nowhere as if it was fucking nothing.
So, right.
Yeah. But yeah, it's weird. Because it's a noticeable change in direction from, right, we don't look at her anymore, we're looking at this chick.
Yeah, and completely not motivated by anything that happens in the story that I recall. It might be another thing where they explain it away with one little bit of voiceover, like at some point. But I don't know. It doesn't really. I don't think it's super detrimental to your enjoyment of this movie.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think if you can get past the fairly gnarly rape scenes and just how big of a fucking scumbag our main character is in this movie, you're gonna have a pretty good time with this. Like, it kind of the parallels I drew between this and Danger Diabolic is it is following the villain basically, and to a degree they're both kind of anti-heroes. Like the cast, yeah. I don't know, I can't remember what this dude's name is, it's our lead actor in this movie, but he's very attractive and it is kind of a drag seeing him do terrible, despicable fucking things throughout this, but he still has sort of a weird like Charles Manson almost esque charm to him, if you know.
Yeah, you're right, and then you get like as a counterpoint to him, you have what's his name? Santini is the detective that's kind of after him. So you get him, the police inspector, who's kind of like the foil trying to get him, which in itself is kind of cool. He's not, he's never as, you always get the feeling that the villain is like one step smarter. But yes, you have that kind of cat and mouse thing going on in the movie, which in any other movie would be the other way around. But it's kind of interestingly played here for sure. So yeah, there you go.
And Diabolic does the same thing too. It's that dude is like a super smart, you know, criminal that's always one step ahead, and that's kind of the whole enjoyment of the movie is seeing how he gets out of these fucking stupid situations with increasingly ludicrous means of getting out of them. It's like a backwards James Bond movie. It's if like James Bond was a fucking super villain, basically, kind of is what Diabolic is. Check out Diabolic. It's pretty goddamn good.
It's great.
Movie.
Like, once again, you always kind of feel that way where you kind of feel like just people, like, if Mario Bava's on the name, fucking watch it. Don't hang around. Guess what? That's going to be awesome. It was a first time watch for me. I enjoyed like checking it out because this to me is like I've said before, I'm starting to really find a fondness for kind of Police Satoshi movies. This is one I hadn't seen before. I don't know if I would have ever seen it, to be honest with you. But it did a lot of things right for me. I still think, even with its rape scene, its inclusion on the list feels a bit hyperbolic compared to a lot of other movies that are in the crime genre from this time period that go just as hard, if not further, that the censors just glossed over because they weren't foreign movies. And I always kind of feel there's it's low hanging fruit because the distributor for these European movies is not going to be the same as like a Warner Brothers or something like that. So they can get these off the shelves easier, for sure. The rape scene is pretty gnarly. It's community service, like regardless of what we say, it's long and it goes on a while. It's not Irreversible standards or I Spit in Your Grave standards or Last House on the Left standards, but it's still fucking unpleasant. So you cannot give this anything less than a community service. So that's what's getting from me. What about yourself, Mark?
Same community service. If you took the rape scene out of this, like, this would be a pretty breezy watch, and I don't think the censors would have had nearly, like, this is nowhere near like Mad Foxes was another one that I was thinking about a lot while watching this. Like, this does not go anywhere near as far as a movie.
Yeah, but
like
in
that
Mad
does.
Foxes, someone threw a grenade in a toilet when someone was taking a shit, and that scene will go down in cinema as one of the best scenes I've ever seen in cinema.
nobody gets their dicks cut off in this movie. Little granny doesn't get shot across the fucking room in a wheelchair. Like, that movie goes infinitely.
I would just remember that the end of that isn't the end of Mad Foxes. That's when the guy. That's when the villain
comes out with the bomb
at the very end.
Yes. Yep. Like, I am going to kill all of you and me now. The end. I love Mad Foxes.
I'm gonna watch that again. That's fucking amazing. I'd forgotten all about that. That's one of my favourite endings to a movie we've watched in the Nasties list. It's just so fucking ballsy. Cool. Right, so two community services, Beast with a Gun. I think we're both saying check it out. I mean, it's of a quality that I think you should check out. Just be warned if you don't like rape scenes in your movie. And when I say like, I mean, I'm using that as an if it's not something you're accustomed to watching or something that upsets you, then don't watch that bit.
If you want to track this one down here in the States, at least, you're going to want to search for The Mad Dog Killer. You can rent this from a few places under that title, or it's on Tubi for free. That's how I watched it.
Nice. Nice. Well, ladies and gents, we are going to bring this in. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love when we return. Myself and Mark are closing out this episode right after this.
This is a test of the emergency podcasting system. Listen to the Psychosemantic Podcast. Politics, movies, and political movies. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, LegionPodcasts.com. The Psychosemantic Podcast.
And you've been listening to Doing the Nasty Podcast. This has been season number 2, episode number 35, where myself and Mark Ball have done Alice Sweet Alice, and we're going to do Beast with a Gun, we're going to do Street Killers, we're going to do Mad Dog Killer, did you say?
Yeah, that's the American title, I think.
Yeah, that's what we covered here. We will be back in a few weeks' time. We're going to be doing something a little bit more supernatural. And in fact, we're going to be doing a lot of supernatural, if I'm being honest. This is going to be a fun double bill. It really, really, really is. These are the double bills that make me smile quite a bit. They are both movies I've seen before, so I'm kind of looking forward to getting into the weirdness that surrounds our first movie, which is The Child from 1977, directed by Robert Voskhananian. I think that's how you pronounce his name. The synopsis here being, a newly hired housekeeper arrives to her employer's house in the countryside. She slowly discovers that the only child in the house, an 11-year-old girl, hides a deadly secret. This one is pure bonkers. I can't stress this enough. It is absolutely maddeningly 70s bonkers. So very much looking forward to this. And we are doubling it up with 1982's Superstition, directed by James W. Robertson. this one here, a witch is put to death in 19... In fact, what, it can't be superstition. We've done that already.
Have we? I don't think so.
Have we not done... Have I done superstition on a different show?
Probably. I don't think I've heard even heard of either of these movies.
I was a little on that. I'm like, I've done this movie. But then it suddenly occurred to me, maybe I've done this elsewhere. Superstition from 1982. A witch is put to death in 1962 and swears vengeance on her persecutors and returns to the present day to punish their descendants. That's right. we're going to be doing both these movies, dude. It's going to be a lot of fun. Superstition is another one which is painfully 80s, like to the point where you're going to have a ball and a good laugh just watching the carnage, some wicked deaths in it, like just like over the top nonsense deaths. So yeah, that's what we're doing on the next episode of Doing the Nasty, The Child from 1977 and Superstition from 1982. Mark, I know we've already done this, you had to recall this pretty quick, but this is coming a week later, so it will still be relevant in that it'll be dropping probably first week in April. So you're doing shows and you've got music out there. Where can people check out your stuff?
Yeah, I got shows the first week of April, actually, so this will probably be coming out right around the same time. April 4th, I'm playing here in Casper, Wyoming, another hometown show, opening up for indie artist Summer Like the Season, who I was actually supposed to open for about a year ago. It was supposed to be like my first show, and they had to skip the date here for whatever reason. Then the Saturday before Easter, I think that's the 8th, maybe, Billings, Montana, playing at Kirk's, my first headline show, come out. It's gonna be a slightly extended set. I've been chipping away at it. I've got a bunch of new tracks to play at those live shows. Should be a new album coming out here pretty soon. Check out my first two albums, Jinxed and Black Cat Under a Blood Moon. Those are on all the streaming shit. It'd be really super cool if you went to Bandcamp and check those out. That's fancymark.bandcamp.com. They're name your own price, so if you want to pay me like a dollar for them or something, that would be super sweet. But mostly I just want people to hear the music, so if you check it out on streaming stuff or whatever, I do see the numbers on those, and I do really appreciate when people check them out. I think that's about it. It'd probably that Candyman retrospective on the podcast under the Russian roulette. I remember the name of the show. I just couldn't remember those.
Yeah, the Russian roulette franchise retro.
That's it. Yep, on Candyman. I'm doing one of those. We I don't know which one yet. Because
you'll find out tonight. I'm doing the draw tonight, so you will find it. And I'm praying for your success in that.
Even if I get part three, it's all good. I still kind of like all of those movies. Well, I mean the ones I've seen. I obviously haven't done two or three, but one and the remake are both really fucking great. So
I'm gonna say that, like, don't pay a dollar for Mark's music. Instead, next time you're going for a coffee at a Starbucks or something, instead of getting that coffee, make your coffee at home and give them the money that you would have spent on that coffee.
That would be most excellent, because I could always use a cup of coffee myself.
There you go. That's how we're doing that. That's how I'm plugging that for you. Ladies and gents, thank you very much for checking out this episode. Like I say, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with The Child and Superstition. Until then, from Mark Ball and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
They were called nasties, and they were nasty.
Some of the things that we've seen are so horrific.
These films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.
An extravaganza of gory violence, capable of depraving and corrupting those who watched it.
I have never seen the video, mister. I wouldn't. I actually don't need to see what I know is in that film.